Support for this program is provided by Chevron.
The weed industry is living through an unprecedented boom, with more and more states moving toward decriminalization or legalization. And with a boom in demand, huge pieces of land are being dedicated to growing cannabis every day throughout the country. But in states where cannabis doesn't grow well outdoors, and that is most places in the U.S., these warehouses have to be fully temperature controlled, packed with artificial lights and irrigation systems so that they can grow weed year-round. All of which takes power. Loads of power.
So it is big and it is growing. It's hard to put a specific number on it right now because there are researchers that have a lot of different opinions. But one researcher we talked to, for example, said that it was nearing 1% of America's energy consumption. Another compared it to data centers, which are a big part of the climate change conversation right now. So it's pretty big already, and not even every state has legalized at this point.
I'm Kelsey Tamburino, and this is Politico Energy. And today, my colleague Anthony Adragna spoke to cannabis reporter Natalie Fertig on the impact of cannabis on America's energy and how federal criminalization is making it worse. It's Monday, August 16th.
So many states have legalized weed in places where cannabis doesn't grow really well outdoors. A good rule of thumb is that cannabis grows really well in the same place where wine grapes grow really well. So if you think of the traditional cannabis growing areas, it's Northern California. That cannabis that's grown in those places can't be taken outside of California or Oregon right now because cannabis is still federally illegal. And the federal government oversees interstate commerce. So that means that if Massachusetts legalizes cannabis, it can't ship in flower that was grown in California. Everything that's sold in Massachusetts has to be grown in Massachusetts. And Massachusetts is a pretty cold state. The other part of this, though, too, is regulation. A lot of states don't like the idea of cannabis being grown outdoors. So it's sort of a twofold thing.
How do these energy needs for cannabis compare to other crops?
So cannabis is at least one of the most, if not the most, energy-consuming crop. And it depends on the type of lights that are used. So on average, one report that we read said that cannabis consumes about 2,000 watts per square foot of canopy, whereas lettuce consumes 50.
Wow.
So that's an incredible difference. It's about 20 times more than lettuce when lettuce is grown indoors. When it's just grown in the sun, it's much less. But again, like we mentioned, not the majority of America's cannabis, about 80% right now, is being grown indoors. So
is this even an issue that is on the radar of some of the staunchest pro-legalization advocates in Congress, who also happen to be some of the biggest climate champs in Congress?
Most of them know. The Venn diagram between pro-cannabis and climate change lawmakers is not huge, but I did talk to most of them. Bernie Sanders was very unaware of the issue. He had no response. Elizabeth Warren also did not have a response and was surprised to hear when I listed some of the numbers for her state. Senator Markey was vaguely aware and said that he had heard of it and that, you know, it was a concern, but didn't have a lot more to add on the subject. Actually, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was the only person that I talked to on Capitol Hill who had a cohesive response. But I, you know, hers even was still, she admitted to not having thought all the way through this, and there's still a lot of questions. But we don't have, on the national level, even environmental groups that are super aware of this as an issue at the moment.
Would a federal policy shift, either decriminalization or legalization, affect the energy consumptions, or are those kind of separate issues?
No, it could. The answer to your question is not absolute. There's still a lot of questions about what the market would look like after a federal decriminalization. But the one thing that it would immediately do is that it would lower the state boundaries. The other thing that would change is that cannabis farmers around the country could qualify for any type of federal incentives to make their grows, some of which are in warehouses and are more classified as industrial space than agriculture, could make them more efficient. So, you know, switching to solar panels, upgrading their silver halide lights to LED lights, which are more efficient. Things like that are really expensive. And cannabis companies can't even apply for bank loans right now. So when they do those things, they need to get a whole round of venture capital funding.
Are there interesting solutions out there to help make these operations more energy efficient, energy friendly? Are there companies that are producing, you know, cleaner, better, more sustainably produced weed?
Yes, there are a number of different companies. Some of them are working very hard on finding sustainable ways to grow cannabis outdoors in states besides California and Oregon. There's also a number of different companies that are creating better LED lights. LED lights at the beginning of the cannabis industry were not great for growing cannabis because they didn't emit enough of the correct light. You can get into water too, which is a whole other thing, but there's different groups working on how to best use water so that there's not a lot of extra water waste in cannabis cultivation, either outdoor or indoor. So there's a lot of different strategies being employed, but there's no federal funding behind it yet.
Also, on Friday, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration said the past month was the hottest month ever recorded across the world. According to NOAA, July hit more than 1.5 degrees Fahrenheit above average temperatures, and it said the seven warmest Julys in history have all occurred since 2015. In all, temperatures on land were even hotter than average as a result of heat waves that hit the Northern Hemisphere, including the Pacific Northwest in the U.S. and Canada. For more news on energy and the environment, subscribe to our newsletter at politico.com/morningenergy. Some of the music in today's show was composed by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. I'm Kelsey Tamburino, and I'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Support for this program is provided by Chevron. Did you know that Chevron supports the ambitions of the Paris Agreement? In fact, they've even tied their executives' compensation to lowering the carbon emissions intensity of their operations. Because it's only human to help power a brighter future.